This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Police call a West Lynn teenager a candy store of drugs. NASA, as most people say. NASA may or may not have discovered an alien life form, and a stray emu is found in Redmond, Oregon.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed. For
this
is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, December 2nd, 2010. Police say a West Lynn teenager was arrested Wednesday, and he was like a candy store of drugs.
But without the candy, one imagines.
I would hope maybe he had candy, too.
Maybe it was sort of an inducement. Maybe it was like, when you go to Les Schwab and they give you popcorn.
Or they give you meat in February when you buy tires. Here, it's like you buy enough OxyContin, he'll give you a payday bar.
We're not saying that that happens at Les Schwab, by the way. In no way are we implying that that's the case.
No, the candy store of drugs would
that's
do that.
Right.
Garrett Smith, 18, was taken into custody by a West Lynn High School resource officer in connection with having mushrooms and marijuana within 1,000 feet of a school. The officer said he got information from a staff member at West Lynn High School about two students who smelled like green, unburnt marijuana.
Well, how else are you supposed to get them to the students if you don't take them to school? Sometimes the mountain has to come to Mohammed. I mean, there's just, I was trying to punctuate my statement.
And you did a fine
job. Trying to bring it into stark relief. I'm Rick Emerson.
The Westland Police said the teen had LSD, hash oil, ecstasy, six bongs, flavored rolling paper, and a fake urine kit used to fool drug tests.
And that was just under one boob. Hey!
Woo! Yeah, see, if you weren't listening yesterday to the Rick Emerson Show, you don't know what that means.
That's right.
The arresting officer says Smith was like a candy store of drugs.
There ought to be a drug store of candy somewhere, you know, just to balance it out and to make sure that the force is sort of equal.
You know, they do sell candy at drug stores, so it's only fair that the drugstore would sell.
So drugstores are responsible for this. They
right.
made this happen.
They made him what he is today.
This was a complimentary externality brought into existence by drugstores.
I say we all file a class action lawsuit right now against Rite Aid.
Revolution!
Smith is being held at the Clackamas County Jail on $50,000 bail. Earlier this week, blogger Jason Kottke made waves on the internet by wondering aloud whether NASA had discovered extraterrestrial life.
Really? Is that what it takes to make waves, is to just post a bunch of stuff that you think might be true on the internet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Have you learned nothing?
I'm Rick just saying, it seems like everybody on the planet ought to be famous at this point. I mean, really, if the bar is set so unbelievably low.
Kottke noted that the agency is slated to hold a press conference today to discuss an astrobiology finding that will impact the search for evidence of extraterrestrial life, and guessed that what they had found was arsenic on Titan. Astrobiology is the study of the origin, evolution, distribution, and future of life in the universe, in case you were wondering. Atlantic editor Alexis Madrigal put a damper on the rumors. I've seen the Science magazine paper. He tweeted about the paper rumored to contain evidence of alien life. It's not that. But this morning, Gizmodo blogger Jesus Diaz threw more coal on the fire, boldly claiming to have the inside scoop. At their conference today, NASA scientist Felisa Wolf-Simon will announce that they have found a bacteria whose DNA is completely alien to what we know today, he writes, citing a Dutch media outlet.
If it seems like it's completely alien to what we know today, then it's probably not DNA. I mean, call me crazy.
Well, he may be misusing the word.
I don't think somebody has access to dictionaries.
Ostensibly, what was found in California's toxic Mono Lake is a bacteria reportedly made of arsenic, not phosphorus, which means that it doesn't share the biological building blocks of anything currently living on planet Earth. He wrote that if this is true, the implications of the discovery are enormous to our understanding of life itself and the possibility of finding beings in other planets that don't have to be like planet Earth. NASA will reveal what they actually found at 2 p.m. today.
So wait a minute. But none of this has come from NASA. This is just like a guy said some stuff.
Right.
And they found it in a lake.
Yes.
It wasn't like it was a thing clinging to the outside of Voyager 2 or something, trying to get at the Chuck Berry records.
Right.
Okay. All right. Just checking. Look, I'm not trying to be skeptical. I'm really not. I'm just saying, the acuity and sensitivity to which our news filters have been set over the last 10 or 12 years seems to have degraded somewhat. That's all I'm saying. I'm just trying to, because you know the thing. You worked in a newspaper. Everybody's trying to be first, right?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be the last guy with the story. So you say, what? Gore won the presidency? Print it now! You know? And then so you just end up, we have an entire internet just full of Dewey beats Truman headlines, basically.
Yeah. The whole story is about a blogger who said that he saw the paper that hasn't been released yet,
right,
who was then debunked by a magazine editor who said that she saw something in the Dutch media that said something else.
It's all very confusing.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News, trying to make sense of a complicated world. Here at Cascadia.fm, thank you for joining us. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor. Coming up later on this hour, we got your, amazingly enough, that wasn't even your science news. That was just an overture. That was just a preamble.
Mm.
That was just a little bit of that was a teaser trailer for the science news coming up later on this hour. Also, entertainment news. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemerson.com. Geek Watch, Clown Watch, Cheney Watch, Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas, and we'll do the top five as well. That is all on the way. You are listening to Legion of News, also available on your handheld device at mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm, or as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com.
Police say they are investigating a slaying in southeast Portland. Portland Police Bureau spokeswoman Lieutenant Kelly Schaefer said officers went to the 3500 block of Southeast 72nd Avenue at about 2:30 a.m. this morning after a neighbor called 911. The neighbor told dispatchers she heard loud sounds coming from a nearby home. Arriving officers found a man inside the home with blood on his body. Homicide detectives have determined the man was killed. There's no word on the man's identity. No arrests have been made, police say, but the incident wasn't random, and there's no danger to the neighbors.
I didn't even get a chance to make a Santa joke there. It's like you went to the details before I was able to, That's okay.
I did pause for a beat, though. A slaying.
Yeah.
And then I had to keep going.
It's my fault. I just wasn't quick enough on the draw.
That train was rolling.
This opportunity will present itself again before the holidays are over. Don't you worry.
Speaking of the holidays, that's my segue. New numbers out today show total sales for a group of 27 national chains, including Macy's, Target, and JCPenney, jumped 6%. Some retailers cited strong online sales, but Richard Feinberg of the Purdue Retail Institute says their impact shouldn't be overstated.
This is retail?
Indeed.
Very sexy thing to talk about.
Mm.
Mr. Feinberg does sound like a sexy man.
Mm.
My mother always said I should have been a doctor.
It's a very sexy thing to talk about. But the fact of the matter is that online sales are still a very small part of what's happening in the retail world.
Yeah, he's like sex personified.
Feinberg says that any sexy news on the retail front is a plus with unemployment still high.
People can't scream as loud as the Victoria's Secrets and the Kohl's and the Macy's and the Walmarts. I mean, how do they get above that and convince the consumer that maybe they have something that the consumer wants?
Is he asking us to answer that? Was that a question?
I'm not even sure what he was asking.
I don't
know what any of that meant.
I wasn't aware this was like a picture pages thing where it had to be interactive.
I I didn't study for this news story enough, I guess. I just I don't have any of the answers.
Told there'd be no math.
Feinberg.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
Senator John McCain responded to a new Pentagon report on Don't Ask, Don't Tell in characteristically mavericky fashion this week. He called it flawed and insisted that allowing gays to serve openly would endanger the troops. While the report found that the overwhelming majority of troops were not against seeing the policy repealed, the ones who do oppose repeal are mostly combat troops, a finding McCain cited as evidence in support of the policy. McCain's remarks were countered by Defense Secretary Robert Gates and Admiral Mike Mullen, who said flat out that repeal of the law will not prove unacceptable risk to military readiness.
And also, by the way, whatever happened to, like, you're in the military, you do what we tell you to do.
Yeah.
Hey, we're ordering you to quit being a jackass and to tolerate gays. End of story.
But with McCain and a handful of other lawmakers continuing to oppose repeal, the race is on over whether Congress can act on Don't Ask, Don't Tell before the courts do. Military leaders say court repeal is by far the second choice because it could trigger an immediate and disruptive change.
Now, for the love of God.
Bringing this into force quickly means we have to do some of this in the battlefield. Probably doable, but it's a bigger challenge than we really want to have to take.
Seriously, the idea that my tax dollars are being spent on Congress and presumably the courts at some point worrying about the placement of a guy who is only differentiated from the other guys because of, like, his penis placement. By which I mean where he places his penis, not where it's located on his person. It's just, I mean...
And again, of all of the people in the military who have other things to think about more important than whether or not someone's gay, it would seem like the combat troops especially.
Yeah, you know, like maybe, hey, am I going to get that body armor you promised to send? You know, that might be on the list, but what do I know?
What exactly are the disruptions they're expecting? Like all the gay soldiers are going to put on a rave?
We're doing a production of South Pacific. We're not going to be able to make it to the big push to the Eastern Front today. I'm sorry about that. We'll, our face is really red. We'll have to catch up with you guys tomorrow. I'm sorry about you know, and the other thing about this is that it's interesting. I mean, it's not like the Republicans have a monopoly in this. The Democrats certainly do it, too. But the idea that now in this one instance, we have to wait and see what the troops say. Like, it has to be a show of hands, as though the troops ever get to determine what they, you know, who wants to go to war? No one? Well, I guess we won't. Who wants better food? Everyone. You'll get better food then. As though it suddenly has been, you know, like it became a democracy or something.
It's like I never watched a lot of Star Trek. But the one thing I did notice from my cursory watching of the Star Trek
is that it's filled with gays.
Well, was that of all of the Star Trek captains, what seemed to be the least effective captain was what's her name, played by Kate Mulgrew.
Yes,
because
Janeway.
Janeway, because Janeway wouldn't just tell people what to do.
Right,
everybody'd all be all lined up, and she'd say, "All right, we have to fix our ship and go attack these aliens," and then the other guys would go, "I don't think attacking the aliens is really a good idea, Captain. We all talked about it, and we don't think we should do it." And she'd say, "Well, all right.
Let's break up into dyads and discuss it."
And I always thought, I don't think that's how you're supposed to captain.
No, you got to be Avery Brooks about it.
Yeah.
You got to, you know.
Jean-Luc Picard would not be asking their opinions.
That's what I'm saying. Kirk, you know, machete don't text. Kirk don't brook no dissent.
That's right.
You just, you tell people what to do and you expect that they will do it. And then if not, there's the brig. Exactly. And the clamps!
TriMet opened a new light rail station at Civic Drive in Gresham today, so Gresham can look forward to a lot of random shootings and beatings in the middle of the night.
It's
just
almost
just like Lloyd Center.
It's like a little Christmas gift given only to us and to felons, but mostly to us.
The Blue Line station is sandwiched between the City Hall and Ruby Junction stops. It's been in the works since 1997. Money to build the station came from the Federal Transit Administration and Metro. A pedestrian plaza will be built nearby, which I'm sure will make an excellent place for the police to chase down the muggers.
That's fantastic. You know, somebody ought to just hardwire that place with a bunch of cameras and just put that up for like a $2.99 a month thing. Like if you live in some sort of protected suburb, so you can see how the other half, you know, how the other lower half of the equation lives. You can just get a little glimpse into Gresham every now and again. Jesus.
Now you can actually get mugged in Gresham. Get on the Max, and then get mugged when you get off at Lloyd Center.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, your entertainment news and so forth. This hour of entertainment brought to you by Castalia Language Centers at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com, all one word, PortlandSpanish.com. www.radiotalkradio.com. I imagine that by dint of your patronage of this radio program, you're probably a smooth and sophisticated sort, not unlike Avery Brooks himself. You probably have a stylish way with the ladies. Imagine how augmented that would be. Imagine how much more continental you would appear if every now and again you were just able to come up with a sort of a flowery statement in Spanish. Extolling the virtues of the reddest of roses, or comparing her to a summer's day, or, you know, just ordering tacos or whatever. You can find out how to do all of those things by learning Spanish conversationally, and you learn how to speak Spanish conversationally by going to PortlandSpanish.com and even enrolling Castalia Language Center. Now, when I say Language Center, there's a reason they don't call it a school as such, just because, you know, the word school just has a lot of negative connotations, especially when it comes to language, because you just get packed into a classroom, you know, like so many presumably future bilingual sardines, where you learn nothing, and then you go home no brighter than you were when you went to school that day. So, it really is a different approach to teaching Spanish, where they do a sort of a quasi-immersive program. They'll find something that works with your schedule, no matter what it might be, and whatever your language acuity might be at this moment, they've got something that'll interface with that, and so you can pick up where you left off. You go to PortlandSpanish.com, find out more about Castalia Language Center. They are located in downtown Portland, a proud sponsor of Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
The Deschutes County Sheriff's Office found an emu wandering in a Redmond neighborhood Tuesday. Deputies captured the large flightless bird and took it to a large animal rescue facility in Bend. Right now, though, deputies don't know who owns the emu. Anyone with information, or perhaps anyone listening who has lost an emu recently, is asked to call the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office at 541-617-3325.
Doesn't seem like that could be a whole lot of people. I mean, really, I would imagine that's a necessarily minute group of people who might be looking for a lost emu.
Yeah, I know. You would think that, you know, you'd just ask around a little bit for a couple of minutes and go, do you know anybody who, like, might be missing an emu?
I guess, and
someone would know.
And maybe that's why they don't tag it. Maybe they figure it's not like a terrier, you know, where there's going to be, 75 people at any one point looking for the terrier. Probably you assume that there's no need to identify it as yours because who else would it belong to? Here's the thing about that emu. I'm saying, you know, I hope they find the owner, but if they don't, they are tasty. So, and low in fat. Just, you know, to put that in your back pocket.
I've never eaten emu.
Emu is fantastic.
Is it?
I've had, not like a lot, but a few times I've had emu. I had an emu. Is it emu or emu?
I think it's emu. I've always pronounced it emu.
So we're putting sort of like an M style tilde kind of sound on there?
Yeah, something like that.
Emu. All right. This is like when I found out that I've been pronouncing habanero incorrectly for like 50 years. That there is no tilde on That's a thing apparently that Whitey just put on there to try to look like he knew more than he did. Here's the thing. Whitey never knows more than he thinks it. He's always missing the mark. Okay, emu.
Emu.
Well, in any event, so I had an emu burger at one point, and then I had some emu jerky, which was fantastic. And not covered in mold, by the way.
Mm.
Here's Don Taylor.
After years of lobbying? After years of lobbying, millions of campaign dollars, and a healthy dose of supermodel diplomacy.
What would lobbering even be? It's like slobbering, but then it's like lobster, too, so I don't even really know what the definition... I don't know what it would mean. Lobbering.
I don't know.
Is it sort of like a... Is lobbering like maybe some sort of is it like a British activity that involves throwing something like lobbing but not exactly?
I think it would be like you're slobbering but there's no actual moisture coming out of your mouth. You're lobbering.
Like when you just fall asleep with your mouth open, Homer style, but there's no drool.
Yeah, you're just going. But there's no nothing drooling out of your mouth.
All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway, Russia and Qatar will host the 2018 and 2022 World Cup competitions, according to the Wall Street Journal. In what the journal calls yet another stunning defeat on the international sports stage, the United States lost the 2022 Olympics to the tiny Middle Eastern nation, which will be the first Muslim country ever to host the Cup.
Well done, U.S.
Former President Bill Clinton, actor Morgan Freeman, and model Elle McPherson all arrived in Zurich yesterday and walked into a bar, I'm hoping, because that would be the best joke ever.
It's the strangest conglomeration of people. Why were they? I mean, why?
Apparently, they were sent to lobby the committee. Like they said, who can we convince to bring the World Cup to the United States? We'll send Bill Clinton, Morgan Freeman,
and Elle McPherson.
Okay.
I mean, not that I have a better suggestion or
Our
anything.
Our best
but...
and brightest. But apparently they failed to charm them sufficiently.
Can't you just picture just Bill Clinton going right, as you just said, his heading right to, like, the complimentary lounge or whatever, and just sitting there and just, I just picture him at a bar just, you know, just going right for that bowl of peanuts that always seems to be there and just staring blankly to television. And then Morgan Freeman having to drag him away to like, Bill, we have to go to this thing later on.
Yeah, I mentioned them just talking to him about it and asking him if he's going to go. I don't know why I would go to the, oh wait, Elle McPherson's going to be there?
Exactly.
All right, give me a ticket. Qatar beat out Kansas City in a bid to host the World Cup tournament. Kansas City Wizards president says that the committee has made a big mistake.
You'll rule the day you crossed Kansas!
It's a bad decision, but we'll move forward. You know, I'm sure it'll be here in the United States in 26 or 30, and we'll work towards that. But it's a tough day today.
Wait, is Kansas City not in Kansas?
It's in Missouri.
Does it overlap? Is it one of those cities that crosses, like it's, you know, crosses two states?
I don't know.
There's some city that does that.
I'm horrible at geography.
Me too.
I was about to say, Kansas is right next door to Missouri.
See?
And then I realized I don't know that that's actually true.
And I think it is, but I
know
have...
nothing. I don't know geography.
And I always confuse Missouri and Mississippi because they both start with the M-I-S-S. So I got, you know, nothing there.
I'm one of those people that if you, like, gave me a pen and a piece of paper and I was told to draw the United States and put in where all the states are, I could do, like, Florida and, like, maybe California and Arizona and Texas. And then Oregon and Washington. Everything else is just a blur.
Yeah.
I don't know where anything else
is. It's a huge middle ground where nobody lives, apparently.
Yeah. Anyway, this fella, Heineman, from the Kansas City Wizards, says he's shocked.
Thought that Kansas City did a great job of putting our best foot forward and thought the U.S. bid was very comprehensive and high quality. And, you know, FIFA responded very differently than we thought they did. So it's very, very disappointing.
I'm confused. So this isn't the Olympics.
No, this is soccer.
All right. Well, of course it's not going to. Don't be a jackass. Of course it's not going to come to Missouri. So this is. I somehow missed the beginning of this. I thought that. I heard the mention of soccer there, but I thought we were somehow talking about like the Winter Olympics or the Summer Olympics or some whatever.
Oh no!
I mean, it's at least there you could argue that it's, you know, it's a whole series of sports, some of which might have some foothold of popularity in America. And I know that we like to think that we're all like very continental here, and that we've got a big soccer fan base in the United States. It's just not true.
Well, I would step carefully about dissing soccer.
I'm not dissing soccer. I'm not. It's not about soccer. I'm saying. And I'm not saying there aren't people who are into it, but I'm saying you look at the rest of the world and then you look at America. We don't have a soccer fan base here. That's like saying we have a huge Oasis fan base here, I suppose, compared to, like, I don't know, Antarctica. But I mean, not compared to, you know, the rest of the world. So, I mean, that really is the best comparison I can come up with. You know, we're into soccer the way that we're into Red Dwarf. You know, there's a small group of people who are really, really into it. But it's not like it's 98% of the country shuts down when there's a game happening, which is the way that it is in Europe. I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm not trying to diss soccer. Don't go like waving your tassels or whatever angrily at the speakers or something. I'm just saying, like, we got a ways to go. That is a kind of very typical United States style presumption right there. The idea that, well, of course we're the States. We just discovered this great game called soccer. You ought to come do it here. No, have you guys seen a soccer game? It's great. You know, the rest of the world is like 900,000 people crammed into a stadium for something that, like, we didn't even know existed until about 5 years ago. So, you know, suck it.
Well, in an earlier article, the Wall Street Journal described failure of a U.S. bid as tantamount to global humiliation and evidence that the rest of the world no longer considers the U.S. to be an attractive destination for prestigious global sporting events.
Uh-huh.
The journal also notes that while most 2022 contenders took a personal tone in the final presentations on Wednesday, the U.S. delegation busted out the pie charts to show just how much revenue a World Cup would generate for media and sponsors. This was followed by a presentation by Bill Clinton, who, according to the Wall Street Journal, spoke for several minutes about himself and his foundation before touching on FIFA's social goals and how the U.S. could help achieve them.
That's awesome.
The next games will be held in Russia, which will need to spend an estimated $3.82 billion to construct 13 stadiums in advance of the Cup.
Oh, that's fantastic. I like the idea that when you're Bill Clinton, though, it doesn't matter what they've actually brought you there to talk about. You can just go to your regular speaking points. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. You can just sit and just bump your gums about anything.
Why are you Bill Clinton? I used to be president.
Yeah.
And I like the ladies.
I mean, he could just sit there at the podium and just sort of, you know, pick specks of lint off his sleeves. Doesn't really matter. He's got his speaking fee. What does he care? You're listening to Legion of News right here. You know, it just bugs me that clock fell off the wall. Just a moment, you all didn't hear this, but just moments before we went on the air, like 2 minutes to noon or something, the clock, which is mounted on the wall of the studios here, just plummeted to the ground. And so now I'm looking over, and it's just, it's sad. It's like a, you know, it's like a soldier that's lying on the battlefield after a particularly, you know, hellacious conflict.
Well, here's the thing. It was sitting on that chair just as it is now when I got here before you arrived.
Oh, I see.
And I thought, the battery must have died, and somebody was going to fix it. And then somehow, somewhere in there, somebody, I guess, put it back up.
That's me. I put it back up.
Oh, you put it back up. Okay.
So I guess maybe the moorings itself are the problem. All right. Well, I'll fix that later.
So the second falling was your fault, because apparently you didn't secure it properly.
Well, I guess. There must be some sort of a... It's not a problem with me, Dawn. It never is. It's a problem with the wall. It's a problem with the thing that's not me. And whenever there's an equation in which there's me and there's something else, the problem is always with the something else. It's never with me, Rick Emerson. Mm. Just write that down. You're going to find that things go a lot easier for you if you just presume that's the case all the time. If you operate from that sort of default worldview, things will be much smoother.
Let's do our science here.
Here's your science on the march for Thursday, right here at Legion of News.
Have you been desiring a trip to space, Rick Emerson, but can't afford it?
Yes.
Well, there's an option for you. Dozens of companies and agencies are giving away suborbital space trips for promotional or educational purposes. The latest entry comes from Melbourne, Florida-based Ares Institute, a nonprofit set up to promote space exploration and educational programs. The point of the project is to raise interest and awareness in the public. Most people normally wouldn't be able to fly in space because they can't afford it, said Ares Executive Director Matthew Travis. He announced last week he will be giving away a ticket for a suborbital space flight in 2013. It hopes the promotion will raise funds for its other programs. The winner won't be the only one flying for free. Symantec Corporation, which makes computer software, last year named Jorge Patricio Leon Lopez from Chile the winner of its space flight giveaway. And Audi selected Ian Anderson of Staffordshire, UK, as the recipient for its seat aboard Virgin Galactic's spaceship. Virgin CEO Richard Branson said he expects passenger flights to begin in a year to 18 months.
Did you pick this story just to screw with me? Is that what this is all about? Is this just a little toying with Rick Emerson? All right. Because I wasn't quite sure until you went to the Richard Branson thing, which I think I specifically mentioned last week, was one of those stories that there was some, like, auto pen somewhere that just cranked out one of those stories about every 9 days for us to read.
And you keep insisting that it's not actually space. So I'm just going to keep reading these stories about these space flights,
Okay. Which
you insist are not actually space.
Well, it's a space, but I mean... So is that corner of the studio over there. I mean, saying it's a space is not the same thing as saying it's outer space.
It's space.
Okay, but then you don't even...
It's a suborbital space flight.
You're suborbital. Right now, at this very moment, you are suborbital. You're below where the geosynchronous orbit happens. So really, I mean, you could just save yourself the money by just sitting where you are right now and going, hey, look at me, I'm in space.
Tickets for suborbital space flights range from between $100,000 to $200,000, with passenger service expected to begin in late 2011 or 2012. Companies preparing for commercial suborbital passenger service include Virgin Galactic, a U.S.-based offshoot of Branson's Virgin Group of London, and Excor Aerospace of Mojave, California.
I think we've discovered how he became a billionaire, by the way. So I guess the fence whitewashing business was all filled up. Here's Don Taylor.
If the early season temperatures are any clue, another winter season of extreme weather across the northern hemisphere could be on the way. A few weeks of cold does not make a climate trend, of course, but the episode fits a pattern. Recent studies point to a greater likelihood of polar temperatures falling farther south, and atmospheric circulation responds to the warming in the Arctic. Britain and northern Europe, as far east as Russia, are in the grip of severe Arctic cold. Forecast models are also calling for an onset of unusually cold temperatures taking hold across the U.S. Midwest and East Coast during the next several days. England has been especially hard hit, with heavy snows and frigid air blowing over the usually mild Cornish coast. In downtown London, even birds are looking for heating vents to catch a break. Yesterday, Lyon Airport canceled flights due to the cold snap, and rail service was suspended across much of the United Kingdom and Europe, including the high-speed Eurostar service linking London and Paris. Forecasters warned of more heavy snow across the Midlands and north through Wales and Scotland. One estimate put the cost of the cold snap at $1.87 billion a day in Britain alone. Commodity prices for energy and agricultural products shot up around the world as traders took in the news of widespread severe cold. Special concern focused on Russia, where severe cold was attacking production already weakened by last summer's devastating heat wave and drought. In Paris, the price of electricity jumped in the face of record demand prompted by the cold.
Let me just tell you this. Never have I been more glad that I decided to eschew a trip, because if things had gone according to plan, and they didn't for any number of reasons, A, fired, B, stupid broken economy, C, fired, and then repeat, because I was actually going to be in Russia for part of this year. A couple years ago, Laura and I were, because I'm not much of a traveling guy. Like, I don't really have any desire to, I'm not some guy that just has, like, the traveling bug where I got to get on a plane and see this crazy mixed up world and kick the dust of this town off my shoes and whatever.
Like your wife has.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, she holds it down for the traveling part of the family. I just sit at home and wait for her to bring me pictures. Yeah. You know, it's sort of like I don't need to hunt or gather. I have people to do that for me now, you know? I go to the supermarket. Somebody has already hunted and gathered for me, and it's wrapped in cellophane. I just have to go pick it up. So she hunts and gathers experience and brings it home, and she says, here I am at a mosque, and here I am buying some saffron. And I say, that's great. Swell. I don't have to go anywhere. One of the places I do kind of wish to see, though, is Russia. I don't know, and I can't really explain it. I have no... And it's been that way ever since I was a kid. I have no explanation for why that is. There's nothing in particular prompted it. Anyway, but a couple years ago, we had talked about going to Russia, because we seem to be surrounded by friends and colleagues who have either gone to Russia for extended periods of time or who have lived in Russia. So we felt like we were, we'd be able to put together some, enough knowledge ahead of time to make it, relatively smooth or whatever. But it was going to be this year. I'm really glad I didn't, because it just seems like that whole country is just... I mean, it's not like Russia really just operates... It's not like things go real smoothly over there most of the time. But this year in particular, they seem to be going through a bit of a rough, cold, killing patch over that country. So maybe next year.
Teenage great white sharks often literally bite more than they can chew, Rick Emerson, according to a new study. The research helps explain why these sharks sometimes attack victims and then quickly swim away. The study, published in the Journal of Biomechanics, determined that the jaws of teenage great white sharks are likely too weak to capture and kill large marine mammals and humans.
It's totally wrong. This is completely inaccurate. This is incorrect. You're passing along falsehoods. Not you so much as the Journal of Jaw Snapping or whatever it is.
The thing about the teenage great white sharks, however, is that doesn't stop them from trying to capture and kill large mammals. There's certainly observational evidence demonstrating that juveniles will make a few exploratory bites, but then wait for larger individuals to bite through the tougher part of big carcasses, such as those of baleen whales, before biting into the softer, exposed flesh, said co-author Stephen Rowe.
Okay, well, this may be true, I say with all of my vast shark knowledge, by which I mean that I've spent countless years sitting on my big fat ass watching Shark Week on the Discovery Channel. And here's the thing about this. So this may be true that, as you get older, you get you get stronger or whatever. So if it's because they're testing, they're talking about this as though it were a fact based on the way they've seen sharks behave with carcasses, which is not the same thing as the way they behave with live prey, it would seem to me. Because the thing that I have always heard is that, which is sort of freaky in a way, is that adult sharks do the same thing where they'll bite you and then they'll swim away. And some guy, some science guy on the Discovery Channel, they asked him why that was. And he goes, well, why should they risk anything? They can just bite you and then sit back and let you bleed to death. And that was the whole thing, is they would just bite you once, because they're no fools. They know that they got, they get a lot of biting power. And they'll just bite you once, and then they'll just sort of go over and have a smoke while they just watch you kind of go, and then they just come over when you're dead.
That's how Komodo dragons operate, which I think is brilliant.
It's great and efficient and terrifying.
Because they just have, like, such incredibly toxic, saliva that they'll, like a deer or a goat or something will come by, or a human, and they'll bite it. And they're not fast enough to chase the thing down
when
it runs away. But they don't need
to
be, because every Komodo dragon will just bite anything it comes across, and they can eat, like, rotting flesh.
Right.
So eventually they will find something that another Komodo dragon bit and then died, and then they'll eat that.
Or they can just spend their day walking in a circle, like making a huge loop around town. Just sort of, walking by like the angel of death, going tag, tag, tag. And then by the time they get back to the beginning, like 5-6 hours later, whatever it is dead.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's, so this story is.
Well, what they did here is it was at the University of New South Wales, the Computational Biomechanics Research Group. And they examined the feeding behavior of a harmless gray nurse shark and a teenage great white shark that measured over 8 feet long. The latter was big enough to do damage, but it wasn't fully grown yet, because an adult great white can measure close to 10 feet or more. They used 3D computer models and advanced engineering techniques to look at how they hunt and kill prey, and basically came to the conclusion that young sharks are basically awkward teenagers that aren't very successful hunters at that stage. And their bites aren't really strong enough to handle really large prey. But so that the great white sharks are not born as super predators. They take years to become formidable hunters.
So it's just a goof, basically.
So if a great white bites you and swims away, it might be because it was a teenager. Like, I will eat you. Oh, I can't.
Is it like ringing your doorbell and then biting you on the femur and then swimming away, giggling and chortling to yourself with your shark pals?
It's exactly like that.
You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour at RickEmerson.com, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today we got your top five, Geek Watch, Clown Watch, Cheney Watch, and Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas. Don't forget, this very fine radio program is available as a download later on today. Direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. You can also get it via iTunes. Is that the end of science, by the way?
It is.
All right, there you go.
Yes, you
can also get it on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. It's brought to you in part by Squires Electric, proud sponsor of Legion of News. SquiresElectric.com is their website, and you can find out more about them also by calling 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, supervisors, and contractors. Electrical wiring or wiring of any kind in your home or business, whether it's a repair, whether it's an updating or installing, or whether it's expanding, whether you're going to be moving your business into a separate building, whether you're going to be remodeling or expanding your home next spring, or whether you just want to make sure that your home is all set up to handle the electrical demands of the winter season, which is nearly upon us. You find out by having Squires Electric come look at your setup, and they can also they can give you an estimate up front, so you know how much any repairs are going to cost you, what it's going to run you to get it done. 503-252-1609 or go to SquiresElectric.com for details. It's 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. This is Don Taylor.
The Portland City Council voted unanimously Wednesday night to support tighter regulations of guns within city limits. The proposal also includes a 7 p.m. curfew for all minors convicted of gun crimes and punishment for adults who fail to secure their weapons from children. In addition, people who have been convicted of gun crimes in the past would be restricted from entering certain high crime areas of the city as part of the plan.
It seems like that's where you want those folks, though. Really, if you've been convicted of a gun crime in the past, I don't want you in my neighborhood. I really would rather you, not that I don't live in a high crime area, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you've been convicted of a gun crime in the past, I would prefer that you just went where it was the most dangerous for you, especially if you're not allowed to own a gun yourself.
I'm always sort of fascinated by and simultaneously disgusted by the amount of time that officials take to pass laws that are purely so you have one more thing that you can throw at somebody when you catch them. That they're not designed to actually stop anything.
No.
Because, it's like telling gang members, you're not allowed to associate with any other gang members. Well, the guy is going to immediately go back and start hanging out with the rest of his gang again. So basically what you've done is you've just created a law so you have one more thing to charge him with the next time he does something. It's just so they can do that thing where they stack up 20 charges against something. I mean, really, you've got somebody who is, convicted of robbing somebody at gunpoint. And you tell them, okay, you are now restricted from, going to, this 20-block radius of Northeast Portland where, all the other, gun-toting criminals are. Well, the guy's a gun-toting criminal. He's not going to go, I can't cross 72nd now because I'll get in trouble. No,
I see no problem with any of this. I don't understand. I'm not disagreeing with you that that's the purpose, but so what? Don't rob a guy at gunpoint. Problem solved. I mean,
well, I know that.
F him. Who cares? Yeah. I mean, seriously. It's not like I'm like Johnny Republican, but I mean, I'm all for doing bad things to guys who rob people at gunpoint.
Oh,
what
I
do
know,
I care?
But then it's a little like that whole thing of declaring an area a prostitution-free zone. When isn't every part of the town supposed to be a prostitution-free zone?
Well, see,
since it's illegal.
Well, no. See, I get that. I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, I understand the whole point. It's just so you can hit them with more offenses when you finally pick them up. I mean, but then it's just a question of, like, well, which crimes really deserve that? Like, it's not like hookers are soliciting fifth graders, I don't think. So to me, that's just a waste of time and tax money because they're not preying on anybody. You know, but if you get some guy who's just some violent hooligan, I mean, you know, whatever. I'm all for whatever, sort of puts him in a small windowless room for a long time.
Well, council members say they believe the new laws would give police and prosecutors more tools to make arrests, but gun advocates have argued that the restrictions may not be legal. Kevin Starrett with the Oregon Firearms Federation says the statute specifically says any ordinance the state legislature has approved is void. After summer filled with gang violence, Portland's mayor and other supporters said these new ordinances are vital to keeping residents safe. Adam said he's well aware of the state legislature's rules and believes that the Portland ordinances address issues that would not be governed by that.
I like how they go to the firearm federation, though, to get a fair, balanced perspective on whether or not this law makes sense and whether it's legally enforceable.
Well, it is about gun restrictions.
Right, so, but I'm saying that's like asking the NRA, like, does this law make sense that that a guy's not allowed to own a gun? Do you feel that this is legal and that it'll be upheld by the courts? I mean, it doesn't really seem like you're going to get – that's not an objective assessment,
well,
it
possibly.
Seems to me. I mean, really, look, I don't have any problem with guns. Whatever. Have all the guns you want. But it's like when you were talking about guys who are obsessed with, they're obsessed with like, circumcision laws. And not just that, but, like, those guys who are, like, they're wanting to stretch their fortune back out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they wake up every day thinking about their junk and other guys' junk and how to elongate it, or certain sections of it. To me, it's like, that's like guys who join gun organizations are like that. And again, I'm not some anti-gun guy. I mean, whatever. Guns are part of the American way of life. They more or less come in breakfast cereal in this country, and that's sort of the way it is. So, you know, whatever. But it's like the idea that, like, your social life is built around you hanging out with other guys who are all just sitting there holding, like, long, shiny, hard, cylindrical things in your hands that make a bang noise and expel something out of the end really fast. I mean, I think we understand what's going on there.
I don't know what you're getting at.
It's all about cheese.
I like cheese.
That's what I'm saying.
House Minority Leader John Boehner ripped Democratic plans to hold a vote on a permanent extension of the Bush-era tax cuts for families making $250,000 a year or less. Boehner says it's just a political stunt.
I'm sorry, this is Boehner. Is that the name of this cut?
Yes.
There we go.
Trying to catch my breath so I don't refer to this this maneuver going on today as chicken crap, all right?
Okay.
Okay.
I have nothing to add to that. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget that, by the way, if you are listening to this program and you find Dawn Taylor amusing and want to know more about her and the other delightful entertainments that she offers, you can hear her. I guess it's too late for yesterday because today is Thursday, but yesterday afternoon, 4 p.m., you did the program that you do every week.
You can go back in time and listen to me yesterday.
Strangely enough, you can, though. That's the thing. If you missed yesterday's program, Hamfisted Radio, which airs 4 p.m. on Wednesdays. You can hear it at hamfistedradio.com. But somebody has mentioned that they heard you doing the show yesterday. So you can download that at hamfistedradio.com and you can find out more about all of that by going to the schedule lineup here at Cascadia.fm.
Well, thank you for that. That was lovely.
I'm just, trying to help
Aww.
The people. Who am I to deny them other avenues of entertainment?
And if you have interest in listening to Hamfisted Radio, next week we are going to be discussing Terry Gilliam's film Brazil. So it's kind of like a homework assignment, basically suggesting listeners watch Brazil between now and then, and then you'll be up to speed. And Mr. Fatboy Roberts and I will be discussing, and perhaps a guest, if I remember to invite someone in time.
Excellent.
We will be discussing Brazil. Let's do our entertainment news.
All right. This is your entertainment news for Thursday right here at Legion of News.
Scream and Party of Five actress Neve Campbell divorced British actor John Light, according to TMZ. The 37-year-old filed for divorce 5 months ago in Los Angeles County Superior Court and requested that Light not be granted spousal support. Campbell, whose next film, Scream 4, opens April 15th, is also divorced from Canadian actor Jeff Holt.
Now, I always assumed she was a bit of a softball player.
No, I don't know. I remember she was dating John Cusack for a while, I thought that seemed interesting.
She just has a kind of a Joan Jett vibe going
not.
On. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of hers. Now, but is she done? I mean, it's so easy to make fun of the fact that she's in Scream 4, but I mean, you gotta pay the rent. But has she done, like, other things I should care about recently?
Not really, no.
I mean, it's like Party of Five, and then she goes to Scream. I'm trying to remember what else she's done.
She made a really good film. Was it the Altman film about the ballet company? Was she in that? I know that she did a really good film in which she was a ballet dancer.
Was she in Wild Things?
Yes.
With what's her name? Denise Richards?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or as I always think of her, Eyebrow Girl.
Yeah. I think that's it, though. Sadly enough, I think that's the last movie I remember seeing her in was Wild Things. I mean, I know she's done other stuff. I just haven't seen those things.
Dancing with the Stars champion Jennifer Grey will undergo surgery to fix a ruptured disc she sustained while competing on the show. It's just going to be like a little surgery where they take out the ruptured disc thing and, you know, it won't be a big deal, the 50-year-old actress told Access Hollywood. Compared to the other surgeries I've had on my neck, my doctor says it won't be a big deal.
She's 50?
Yes.
I never would. I don't know why. You know, it's like I know people, you know, get older and, you know, whatever, and I'm not a spring chicken, but I never would have guessed that she was 50 years of age.
Mm.
Yep. Wow, and you got to figure she's older than that because she's probably shaving years, as they all do. So
quite possibly. Actor Kevin Spacey will star in a production of Richard III next summer at the Old Vic in London. Sam Mendes, who directed Spacey in American Beauty, will direct the play, which opens June 29th. Spacey, who is the Old Vic's artistic director, said in a statement that Sam is one of the finest directors I have had the pleasure of work with, and to gain this opportunity is beyond my wildest hopes. A man wanted in the slaying of a Hollywood publicist killed himself in the lobby of a dreary Los Angeles hotel as police closed in to question him, the latest turn in a case that began in Beverly Hills. The death deepened the mystery in the slaying of Ronnie Chasen, who was shot in her Mercedes as she drove home from the premiere of the burlesque Oscar contender. They say an Oscar contender.
Really?
And then it's burlesque. She's promoting the soundtrack for an Oscar nomination.
Okay, but the way it's written, it sounds like, you know, burlesque is really... What if you saw burlesque and it was just the best film you'd ever seen? What if it was just a revelation to you?
It's the best movie I ever saw. Why is no one watching
Would you even tell anyone? Like, if you went to see burlesque...
I would tell everyone.
And you were like, it's a life-changing experience. Would you just have to keep it to yourself,
maybe? Oh, no, I would tell everyone.
Really?
I would proselytize.
I don't know that I would. I think I might just... I don't even think I would mention that I'd seen it. I think I'd just sort of let it go.
Police have been investigating whether or not her death was a hit or some other kind of attack.
Well, he shot her five times, they said, in the chest.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's all that stuff you see in cop shows where it was like five times in the chest and then there was like the grouping of the shots. So it was somebody who had a lot of experience firing a pistol. So it was very weird. They said, yeah, it looked like she was rubbed out or something.
Yeah, the dead man has not been identified, but the coroner has been identified, but the coroner hasn't released his name because of next of kin hasn't been notified. He's a black male in his 40s, and his last known place of residence hasn't been established. Witnesses said the man appeared to shoot himself in the head on Wednesday, splattering blood across the lobby of a residential hotel where people rent rooms by the month. The building's located in a blue-collar stretch of warehouses, tailors, and travel agencies. It's next door to a dive bar called Gold Diggers Entertainment.
Right now, you can, if you listen carefully, you can hear the pen scratchings as Tom Waits writes a concept album about this.
Beverly Hills Police Chief David Snowden told the Associated Press in an email that the man was a person of interest only in Chasen's death in Beverly Hills, and they were on their way to interview him.
Person of interest is an interesting phrase. That's one of those things that, like, you know, that you were talking about where they were, it's like some legal dodge that the cops came up with just so they can F with you if you're not a suspect.
Yeah.
Because once you're a suspect, then I think you get one of those things, rights.
Yeah.
But if you're just a person of interest, it's like I get the feeling they can just like billy club you all day long. And it doesn't, well, he's not a suspect.
You don't have a right to an attorney.
Yeah.
You're just a person of interest. Where was I? Oh. Inception director Christopher Nolan confirmed Christian Bale's announcement that The Dark Knight Rises will be the final Batman film for them both. I must say, I'm very glad to be embarking on the last chapter of our Batman saga without any sense of obligation or duty to the studio. They did very well with Inception, Nolan said to Entertainment Weekly, so I'm able to go into finishing our story in a very enthusiastic way.
I wonder if this means, like, I am very glad to be finishing up my contract, after which I will not be obligated to make any more pictures and I can demand a lot of money for my next extension.
Probably.
I mean, that's what it is, right? This is like when you got one record left or something, and you want to get it done so you can renegotiate your deal. And does it say the thing in there about how about putting Heath Ledger in it?
No.
Because so this is not Nolan himself, but they always say, but see, the thing is, these things always come out through leaks first as like test balloons. And then depending on the reaction, if the reaction is bad, the director goes, I don't know what that leak is full of it. It's not true at all. But if the reaction is positive, then the director says, you know, then he confirms it later. So there's a source, quote, close to the studio, a Variety reported this, that they're going to use, and it's, and they use they use a lot of weasel words in this. They're very careful about the way they phrase it, but they're going to use unused archival footage plus some CGI to put Heath Ledger in the final in this Batman film. Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah.
They said that it's not going to be it probably won't be a speaking role. That it'll just be like a brief appearance on camera to give like closure to. So that everybody's not going like, whatever happened to the Joker? And so the theory has always been that they'll just have a shot of him in Arkham Asylum or something.
Yeah, I have no idea how I feel about that. I remember when they finished up Oliver Reed's stuff
right.
in Gladiator by just pasting his face on somebody else's body using CGI. And like, it was creepy.
Yeah, as my friend Brandon said, they gumped his ass right into that movie. I'm okay with it, just for the record. I'm really okay with them doing the thing of... If Nolan, because he's not a hack. I mean, Nolan knows what he's doing.
No, and the technology is really, really good now. I mean, if you see the stuff that David Fincher did in
the
his last two
network.
Movies, Social Network and Benjamin Button, which I didn't like Benjamin Button, but the technical stuff in it is just amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it would actually be kind of cool in a meta sort of way to have a shot of the Joker, like, again, like in Arkham or something, or where he's, you know, he's all caged up or whatever. I mean, that's sort of I like that because it's a cool... You know, it's like a cool little it's a cool little wink nudge in a morbid sort of awesome kind of way.
Yeah.
I mean, I dig that.
It could be done tastefully and also kind of creepy and interesting. Like it could be good.
Did I ever have you heard we don't have to do it now, I'll have to do it next hour. Have you heard the most recent? It came out, I guess, about 5-6 months ago, and it's now Ruben has said it's the final release ever of any new Johnny Cash stuff.
No. Let's talk about
seriously,
that next hour.
Make a note because it echoes this whole Heath Ledger thing.
Okay. Ron Perlman told When.com that he's no longer attached to The Hobbit. He was going to join Guillermo del Toro on the movie when he was directing it.
Going to play Smaug.
But when del Toro left the project, Perlman left as well. I was going to be in The Hobbit when Guillermo was directing, he said, but not anymore.
What would he, does it say what he was going to play?
I have
An
no
orc?
Idea what he would be.
Seriously,
the king of the orcs.
How great would it be
know.
If? How awesome would it have been for Ron Perlman to be a hobbit?
Were there orcs in the Hobbit? See, I've never read The Hobbit.
Fail. No, there are orcs.
He was one of the tree guys, an Ent.
Never heard of the Hobbit. I don't know what it, I don't know how to. I got nothing. There's the unless I'm remembering this incorrectly. So when the Bilbo and his mates are off, there's a. Anyway, it's a whole sequence where they're in the woods, and they are captured by orcs who are going to cook them and eat them for dinner. And I forget, it's been so long since I've read it, I forget exactly what happens, but Bilbo does something with Sting, which is his dagger or something, that, anyway, he ends up keeping the orcs there until sunlight comes out, and then they're turned into stone, because orcs aren't able to go out of the light because it turns them to stone, which is why the orcs in Lord of the Rings are so menacing because he's been making a crossbreed of orcs that can travel during daylight, Dawn.
Oh, God, you're such a dork.
I know. But there's a great little moment in Lord of the Rings, I believe it's in the films too, but it's in the books where as Frodo and Samwise are traveling to Mount Doom, they actually pass three huge stone orcs in the woods, and those are the three orcs that kidnapped Bilbo in The Hobbit. I don't even know why we're talking about this. Oh, blah, 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 Ron Perlman, orc.
Right. A community prayer vigil has been held in Detroit for Aretha Franklin a day before organizers say the singing legend is to undergo a medical procedure. City Councilwoman Joanne Watson and others gathered downtown Wednesday to pray for Franklin. Last month, the 68-year-old singer announced she was canceling all concert dates and personal appearances through May on the orders of her doctors. Franklin wasn't at the vigil, but in a statement, she thanked the city council, saying all prayers are good. A news release announcing the vigil says Franklin's medical procedure is scheduled for today. A message seeking comment was left with Franklin's publicist, Tracy.
It didn't
Jordan.
Say what the procedure is?
No.
Here's the thing about Aretha Franklin. She's huge. I mean, she's
a big gal.
But I mean, it goes beyond it. Like,
there's
she's
a lot of voice that needs to be.
Yeah, she's never been a small woman. I mean, that's, you know, which is fine. But I mean, she's. I mean, I really do wonder if there's some, like, medical, like a clinical thing there. Because the last time I saw her on television, I mean, she seemed dangerously large. I mean, as though there was some sort of, like, glandular issue going on there. So
how many boots do you think she could shoplift?
I don't know. I mean, if I was, I don't know, if I was wittier, I would have something.
Two pairs of boots, three pairs of boots.
See, it's not even yet.
That, from now on, that is going to be my thing on, like, how fat people
are. Is that your measuring
are.
Unit?
You know, how many boots could they hide?
Is it like knots, you know, when you're traveling on the sea,
yes,
or something? Is it like that thing that Stuff Magazine does where it's the I think it's like the baconometer or something. It's like, how many strips of bacon is this hot fudge sundae equivalent to? See, this is how you know I'm a hack, because I can't come up with the... Help me finish this. So, like, she's not stealing boots. She's big enough to steal. I was gonna say, like, the whole
snowshoes.
Nah, see, and I was gonna go like the whole whatever, the whole herd, the whole, but not that. You know, but it's like the whole.
Oh, you're trying to go with a leather thing?
Yeah, you know, it's like the whole factory, though, but not that. I mean, it's something, the whole.
I see that's
what I'm saying. Who's a prominent maker of boots?
Fry, boots.
Is that, but I mean, is it, but see, it will, but you need a full name like Tom McCann.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You go, she can't just smuggle boots, she can actually smuggle Tom McCann. But, you know, not that.
Yeah.
See, there's a joke there somewhere, and I don't know what it is.
We'll work on that.
All right, well, we'll circle back around to this. Hey, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And coming up next hour at rickemerson.com, the Rick Emerson radio program with your Geek Watch, Clown Watch, your Cheney Watch, Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas, and the Top 5, and so forth. This very fine radio program, Legion of News, brought to you by Christmas Mountain Trees. You can go to christmasmountaintrees.com to find out the driving directions, how to get there. And if you want to get there this Saturday, by God, that's when you ought to be there. It's this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Don Taylor and myself will be there. We'll be there selecting trees for our own places of residence, mm-hmm, and also for the break room here, the Emerson News Network. You go to christmasmountaintrees.com. It's a third-generation family farm, full-time farm. It is their bailiwick. It is their livelihood. Year-round, they grow trees, and then every holiday season, they get them ready. So you can go up and you can actually select, it's right out of the actual tree farm, the tree that you want for your house, or, you know, for your living room, for your apartment, for your business, for whatever. So you take the entire family up there. Again, you go to christmasmountaintrees.com to get driving directions, or you can go to their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/christmasmountain, to get weather reports for exactly what the roads are going to be like on the way there. And you go there, you get spectacular views, you know, the Cascades around you, you know, they'll warm you up with like a hot drink. You stand in front of a fire for a while, and then you go out and you go into the forest itself. You can go on foot, or there's a wagon that will take you through with you and your family. You find the perfect tree, they take it, they cut it down, they put it on your car, you go home, bam, best Christmas ever, right out of the gate.
Will there be squirrels and bunnies and woodland creatures?
Probably. And then some sort of a sacrifice to the Dark Lord, I would imagine.
Awesome.
And that's not extra, that's included. So you can find out more by going to christmasmountaintrees.com. Regular hours are Wednesday to Friday, 10 to 4:30, Saturday, Sunday, 9 to 4:30, all the way up till December 19th. So you do want to act now, because they got like 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks, and they're going to be closing it down. So find out more at christmasmountaintrees.com. Let's do like one more here, and then we'll wrap it up.
Well, speaking of Christmas, a Portland-Vancouver tradition will continue this year as the Christmas ships get ready to shine their lights on the Willamette and Columbia Rivers. Between 50 and 60 brightly decorated boats make up the annual fleet. On Saturday, they'll pull out from the Camas-Washougal docks. This will be followed by nightly parades on the Columbia and Willamette Rivers through December 21st. This is the 56th year for the all-volunteer organization. The parade started with one boat and has grown to dozens of vessels ranging from 16 to 65 feet, all decorated with Christmas themes. Each boat owner pays their own fuel insurance and other costs. Christmas ships organizers seek donations from restaurants and hotels along the routes to help pay for the event insurance and other costs. You can find a complete parade schedule to find out when they'll be where at christmasships.org.
Excellent. And with that, we bring to a conclusion another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemerson.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting episode of Legion of News. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?